Hello, hello. This is Kinnack coming back for the 2022 Metroplex Day podcast, assuming that I don't sneak in another one next month, which is probably a fair assumption. We've got a fair number of questions this time, so I will get to them. I did kind of cheat and look ahead at the first question, and it's basically a bunch of the stuff that I would say in an intro, so I'll just get right to it. First off, we've got some questions from Al. It's been a while. How have you been? Things have been, I mean, a mixed bag, right? Not really a hot take, but not a big fan of this whole global pandemic thing. Politics continues to be stressful. My spouse, Liz, has been working on Magic the Gathering, sort of managing their editors. I'm not sure if that happened before my last podcast, but she's been doing that for quite some time now, and really enjoying it. It's been really good. I had been until like just a couple weeks ago, actually since after the podcast started got posted. This is part of the reason that it took a while for me to get back around to it. I actually changed positions from doing game testing for Nintendo, which is either less or more fun than it sounds like, depending on how much you know about game testing. I found it generally pretty pleasant job, but the people who came in expecting to be paid to play games all day were often very disappointed. It's a lot more focused and finicky and trying to like break things all day, so it's a bit more like almost like the research phase for setting up a speed run than it is what we would, you know, normally think of as playing a game. But I think that's fun, so that's great. Don't look for me on any speedrunning sites, though. I'm actually fairly bad at playing video games, which is one of the other things that's funny that, like, didn't get in the way at all of testing games. But, you know, if we have, like, a Smash Brothers tournament or something like that, I would just get absolutely wrecked by all of my coworkers. But yeah, I finished up my last contract there. Got a Pokemon Violet out the door. It's the last game I worked on. Which brings the ones that I can talk about to some DLC for Luigi's Mansion 3, Breath of the Wild remake, Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity, and the DLC for that. One that I still can't talk about that hasn't even been announced. A bit on Mario Strikers Battle League. Got to try a bunch of different games. Which is very interesting. It's one of those things where, you know, you have sort of it's like, which of these games would I most like to play versus which of these games were actually like the most fun to test. Like so much of it ends up being just like organizational stuff, like any other job. And I think that hopefully some of that comes through in the Midgard HQ stuff that we're working on now, where it's just sort of like really at the end of the day, like this is more about like a lot of this is more about office politics than and not even office politics in the traditional sense, like interdepartmental politics. And Yeah, and so just like how that played out really determined way more of how fun something was to test than the actual like how fun I would normally find the game, typically. Yeah, just interesting to see. I mean, if you have like a really receptive dev, you can really get a lot done, get a lot of good changes made, and but sometimes that's just not how you end up, and you're sort of either talking to a brick wall or just hitting really hard deadlines that nobody at sort of the level that you're working at can do anything about. So yeah, there's sort of a pendulum that swings back and forth, but a lot of fun, a lot of very different projects. But as I said, I finished up my contract and have moved over to Paizo, who I've mentioned before, because I've done some freelance writing for them in the past, doing some Adventure Path volumes mostly. And I'm doing development work for them now, which is to say, thus far, I've just been making, well, not making isn't even really right, developing some Pathfinder 2E monsters. So freelancers, get contracted to, it's like, hey, make this sweet monster for us, and they send them in, and it's like, rules don't work, or like it just needs some tweaking up on the sweetness, or if they're just absolutely god tier, like, oh yeah, that looks good. But you don't get to do that a lot. I mean, sort of in the same way as working on games, there's not like you don't get a game with no bugs in it, like, I mean, at release, let alone, when you're working in debug. It's just sort of it's always gonna be snakes, always gonna be stuff that can be improved. And yeah, that's what I'm doing now. But yeah, I'm working with their rules and lore team for Pathfinder Second Edition. Which, for those of you who have not heard of it, it's kind of like a fork in the code from D&D that has sort of broke off. The original Pathfinder broke off when D&D moved from 3rd to 4th edition, which was, I want to say, like 2004, something like that. And second edition came around, obviously, a lot more recently. And it is a really good game. I really like it a lot, like both from the running it perspective and from the working on it design perspective. So that's my day job now, which is pretty cool. I do. Liz. Oh. I guess one of the other side benefits of this is that I'm in a union now, which is very cool. Paizo has one of the first unions in sort of really in gaming space in general, but in tabletop space in particular. The folks back at Nintendo could also use some collective bargaining. Let's say the team that I was on was all contractors, which tends to be a very I'm not sure if you can hear the bell going. There we go. But yeah, the team at Nintendo that I was on was just all contractors and paid a wage that would sound like a living wage to a lot of the US, just because oh, it's really expensive to live out here. But the like when it's actually like taken, you know, because Nintendo requires you to like come in person to do the testing, except for a brief period during the height of the pandemic, which was shocking on many levels. Their security is not messing around. But yeah, they don't get paid enough. They don't get enough benefits. Like it's kind of a bad situation as far as that goes. But I will, nice thing for Metroplexity is that, the plan is basically to be going from, you know, working 40 hours a week and then freelancing and then doing, you know, Metroplexity is going to, working 40 hours a week and hopefully not doing a lot of or maybe any freelancing, very, very limited amount. And then, because all of the freelancing was with Paizo, and that's my day job now. And if I was gonna work more at my day job, I would just, you know, they would have to pay me time and a half, hopefully. But yeah, that's probably the upshot for Metroplexity, and the fact that I don't have to walk 45 minutes each way to work. I just have to, you know, walk maybe 45 steps down to the office in our apartment. So that's nice. Also giving me a lot of chances to, you know, I guess I wasn't not jamming out to my own music while I was working at Nintendo, but it's a very, it's just a pretty chill gig. I think I'm gonna like it there. That does remind me though. Working at Nintendo versus working at the company that kind of inspired Midgard to a large extent, it is like the difference in levels of security just never ceased to astound me. You know, how like one of them it's like, oh yeah, these are like, you know, contracts, but not contracts, but like schematics for like a military contract, you know, like these are probably, I mean, not like, you know, top secret, like nuclear specs or anything, but like, it's like, these are like tank parts, you know, like not stuff that is the end of the world, but like stuff that like random civilians shouldn't just be looking at for no reason. Definitely just ran into a lot of those for no reason. Whereas like if somebody, you know, finds out about a Pokemon before they're supposed to, it's the end, right? Like they, so it's, it was just interesting to see the difference there. And I think, a lot of that does go back to profit motive, really, right? Like, ultimately, government probably doesn't care enough to stop giving them contracts for being a little lax in their information security. But, you know, people will presumably enjoy Pokemon games less or buy less of them. I'm sure that there are a lot of arguments online about whether leaks count as advertising or not, but at the very least, it gives the poor marketing people. Absolute headaches. So purely aside from profit motive, just like as a sort of like a coworker thing, it's just leaks are huge pain in the ass for the internal people who have to deal with them. So it's like you don't. Although from what I understand, a lot of stuff did get leaked from Scarlet and Violet, which is unfortunate, but I guess you'll have that. Anyway, so yeah, that's how things have been for me. Spent like half the year basically honestly so sick that I was just like incoherent. I basically don't remember. The first half of this year was not great. I shouldn't even really say so sick. I just, because I wasn't really like processing food, my body was kind of in hibernation, in the sense that I just wasn't getting enough calories to power anything more than like couch sitting and extremely easy reading. Even like TV stuff, I would lose the thread pretty easily just because I was starving, not fun. Been there before. Will probably be there again. Because that's, you know, likely to occur if I screwed up my diet, which actually did probably happen in the last week. But I'm not sure exactly what. I just sort of got glutened. Anyway, that's how I've been. If that sounded like a laundry list of complaints, I'm actually in pretty good shape, like, as far as, like, emotionally and stuff. It's just a lot of really kind of shitty things have happened, and I'm sure that a lot of folks are kind of sharing that experience in the world at large. But I guess good stuff. Liz is super happy with her job. Puyo got to take a year off from Starbucks and keep her benefits. That's a thing they let you do. It's called a coffee break, which is very cute. So Puyo has actually been went back to hang out with her mom and get some sort of training, some cooking boot camp. Because Puyo's cooking skill is, well, as of, like, before then, like, she was almost, like, pathologically afraid of cooking. Because she was not great at it, and she thought that she was really bad at it, that sort of thing. But she basically went home to her mom's, who was amazing, you know, like, kind of traditional housewife, crazy, like, it's like, well, I've got all day to make this dinner, like, let's knock this out of the park, kind of cook, and learned a ton, like, just basically went back there for 2 or 3 weeks, and just did nothing but cook with her mom, which is, I don't know, it's the sort of thing that I hope more people have sort of, like, the opportunity to do, sort of go back and engage with their parents as people, as adults, assuming, you know, they have relatively cool parents. Okay. Now, there's a lot of stuff going on. A lot of it's bad, but a lot of it's good too. Oh yeah, and we have babies who are adorable. It's been so long since the last podcast, I'm not sure exactly how long it was. We had Tiff and Zoe, our two cats, for literally the whole time that I, like, from pre-development on Metroplexity through, like, I guess a little over a year ago now. They both passed away pretty... I don't want to say, like, suddenly exactly. I mean, they were both 18, which is really quite old for a cat. And Zoe's health had been declining for quite a while. We were having to give her fluids every day and, you know, medicine and stuff. And she eventually just kind of, I guess, went over the tipping point. And over the course of just a couple weeks, went blind, and stopped being able to take care of herself, lost control of her limbs. Like, it was really, really sudden. Like, went from a very, very old, but totally okay cat to the end in just like a couple weeks. And then Tiff passed away like, I don't know, maybe 10 days after that. And he had been really just fine up to that point, aside from being a little heavy. And so, I'm not actually sure how much I've talked about them, but they never really got along for as long as we had them. But the we actually our apartment in Redmond, there's a cat cafe literally across the street from us. So we started sort of stalking them a little bit and found a pair of bonded adults that they had there, who are Balder and Nana. And which like not intentionally really Metroplexity themed. Nana is Balder's wife, by the way, in Norse mythology. Definitely we went through sort of like came up with a list of kind of paired paired names that felt like they fit their personalities, but also like weren't too siblingy, because they're pretty, I mean, I don't want to like project human, you know, emotions on them or anything, but like they're not siblings, and they act more like a couple, to the extent that calling them siblings, a sibling name, would just be kind of like weird in Game of Thrones. They're adorable and they're doing great. But the reason we ended up giving them very North mythology Metroplexity names is because Balder is super friendly and super adorable. I mean, like, appearance wise he's just like standard black cat, like could be not distinguished from any like feral black cat that you might have around. The little they both have the clipped ear from catch and spay, neuter and release. So like that's an identifying mark, but just means he lived a hard life on the streets before we got him. But he, when we met him, he was actually under a like cabinet, curled up, and Liz reaches under the cabinet to give him some pets, and I'm like, oh my god, like, we're going to the emergency room. Like, somebody get the first aid kit. Like, that hand is just gone. Write it off now. And he was just sort of like, oh, this is nice, and like purred. And when Liz took her hand back, he reached out, like grabbed it and folded back under the cabinet. So Boulder is absurdly loving. So he got sort of the there was a whole list of names that we were trying, but definitely the whole mythological resonance of my kid is so cute that I've gone around and convinced, you know, every plant and animal and substance to not harm them because they are so friggin' adorable, definitely was there. Not a kind of, you know, got along on the naming ride. But yeah, they're good, and they sleep with us, and you know, do the purring things and stuff. They're very good kitties. Okay. Continuing with some other questions. A lot of stuff to talk about, you know. How's the Metropoxy as a game been faring? Actually, quite a nice uptick in gang warfare lately. Oh, that is good to hear about the gang warfare. I mean, always want as much gang warfare as possible, right? Yeah, it's the game. Obviously, like, I haven't been able to put in nearly as much time as I wanted to into the game this year. But beyond that, things are stable as far as server costs and things. Like, we're still covered. It's game's not hemorrhaging money or anything. Keep the lights on basically indefinitely, thanks to Alan or folks on Patreon. And yeah, that's continued to be a huge weight off my shoulders. There is some code stuff that I will have to do, just sort of as time advances. PHP does keep changing, and I'll have to, there's some pretty major code rewrites that I'll have to do at some point, or, you know, stuff will just explode. So hopefully, and that's obviously like the most boring, lame kind of coding. That's the kind of coding that you want to get, you know, paid $50 an hour for. Not that I've ever been paid $50 an hour, but that's that's like actual, like, corporate programmer coding. But I will be sort of trying to tackle that along with, you know, continuing to add content. We'll see how that balances out. Because, yeah, eventually, any of you who've worked in IT will have run into this, but an insufficiently maintained program is kind of a ticking time bomb. And like, we're not in bad shape, but we're not really in good shape either. So I need to do a lot of refactoring and updates and stuff like that. So that's the only real, like, threat on the horizon, and that's a very nebulous sort of, like, eventually PHP will release an update that breaks absolutely everything. And we have experienced that before, and we, you know, fixed it and all as well. But eventually, like, something will come down the pipe. And then I'll usually have, like, you know, 6 months to a year of forewarning to change, like, the thousands and thousands of lines of code. But in some of those cases, like, there are things that they'll be kind of like, we're going to change this eventually, just FYI. And I would like to get on top of all of that, I guess. Like, there's nothing that is pressing in that, like, they've changed it already in the next time we have to update the server. Everything will go to hell in a handbasket, at least that I'm aware of. But there are definitely some things that we could be more up to date on. But yeah, like, as far as user base, actually, we've been doing pretty well as far as just like folks leave, folks come back. We've been getting some new folks drifting in. I mean, our player base has never been gargantuan, obviously, but I feel like it's been pretty active. I think our you know, cozy little community has continued to be little, for sure, but cozy, and that, I don't know, I like the coziness a lot, so I'm not super bent out of shape about that. Midgard HQ questions. Back to Al. Do the various factions I've aligned myself with help in Midgard HQ yet? The only one that actually triggers so far is the Mafia. The other ones will show up sort of higher in the building, so to speak. But yeah, you can call Trigari to get the I'm sorry, the families, not the Mafia, but yeah, you can call them to basically insta-fix the lift, and there's some other subtler benefits you can get from that as well. But yeah, the others will kick in further up. How do you encounter the huge rat in the parking garage? It's very elusive, even trying for it on purpose. Yeah, it's sort of, I can see that being sort of tricky, because there's a push and pull there, where it's pretty easy to pretty hard to attract them and pretty easy to scare them off, but a lot of the things that you're doing that would attract them also work towards scaring them off. So I don't want to say there's a trick to it. Like, I didn't include them as like, you know, a special thing to unlock. It's just like, oh yeah, there's probably it's like, I've got this great art for a huge rat in the garage. I should probably include it. And just sort of their natural part of the ecosystem. So I don't think that they necessarily will have like, it's not a puzzle exactly in the classical sense. Like, I'm not really hiding them. It's just sort of, I just put them where they feel appropriate to me, and that's pretty rare. We've seen CD4 hounds now. Janitor mentioned CD3 hounds. Well, we see those as an opponent. It is pretty likely that you'll see some of the other hound drones as opponents. Maybe even higher up in HQ. But I guess there aren't specific plans for CD3. What destination are the normal drone hound enemies? CD1? I believe so, yeah. Let me actually I have a document. I'm almost positive that they're CD1, but let me there's no reason to keep track of these things if you don't use them to prevent yourself from saying dumb stuff. They are CD1, and they're kind of the base model that was developed, 10 plus years ago. The serving drone must be part of the HD line. What's its destination? That one actually I have not decided on yet. I know in world the humanoid drones have a lot more like fiddly customization going on than some of the others, because many more of them are custom built for various types of user interaction, customer service type stuff. So even if you it would be more a question of what kind of chassis does it have? It would probably wouldn't be HD1, but it's in there. But then the more than that with those, really, you're getting into a lot of the customization and modification. So two humanoid drones on the same chassis, you're likely to have just vastly different, both in terms of combat counters and just interacting with them normally, which you can kind of tell with that drone, being able to dispense coffee and stuff. Obviously, that's not a function that all humanoid drones share. Is there anything we can do to get more intact IDs instead of deactivated IDs from combat drops? From combat drops specifically, I don't think so. It's just kind of a question of if they notice. I'll put some thought into that. It's possible there might be something with alert levels or the like that might make sense to let you have a little control over that knob. Are there any packages or letters that we can open with the package opener or ornate letter opener? No, actually, as it turns out, there totally are not. I feel like there needs to be one that just gives you two will experience or something from opening it with the appropriate tool, because it is really satisfying using package opener or letter opener when it works perfectly and you just sort of and the thing's open. I think that's nice. That's two will XP nice. But yeah, I would be pretty surprised if I ever included something that like required the package opener to open. Just because I guess the nature of packages, you can probably open this with like a rock or spare keys or like any sort of bladed weapon, right? Yeah, unless you're running on like a, Twilight Heroes, Kingdom of Loathing type logic, which wouldn't be completely out of place in Eclipsy Dreamy type stuff, but it's not not the plans at the time being. Other questions? I would love to document opponent ID numbers. An excuse to refight every opponent in the game would be a neat way to reinvigorate a lot of old content. Any chance? That is an interesting question. I don't think it's quite as weird. Well, it's definitely not nearly as weird as the encounter stuff. Because there's a lot of encounters that do things like they look the same, but they have different numbers, or like they look totally different, but they have the same number, and it wouldn't actually be super useful to you. I mean, except from like a pure like picking the game apart curiosity kind of thing, which I'm not. I mean, like obviously, like you're welcome to do. Like that's how some people enjoy it, but like I'm not going to, enable you just for that, I guess. But the enemies I might be able to do. Let's see. We're up to 319. Yeah, I will think about that some. I don't think at present. There's a lot of like gameplay reason for it, so I'd probably want to if I were going to include that, I would probably include it along with some content that was tied to those numbers, basically. Like a mark or chosen enemy type subsystem for some skills or something like that. Just so that you can make sure with those skills, like when they're supposed to and not supposed to apply. Because there are a few places where, like the, I think it's Midgard Internal Security? Midgard Heavy, I know, dude, does this. Where you have, like, the two heavies. And those are, code-wise, completely separate enemies, right? Like, they're obviously just the same people who have picked up like different gear, but that's how the code deals with that, and so having if I included like that sort of like tracking or chosen enemy type thing, I would probably expose it at that point, just so that people would be able to, like I said, see whether it's supposed to be working or not. Is there any way to prevent opponents from running away? Seems only fair. There should be a couple. I think that ultimately they're not working as well as I'd hoped. So I'm probably going to have to go in there and just make it easier, essentially. But yeah, that's sort of, I guess, the situation. So I guess there are currently a couple of ways, but I think there probably are things you're tried, and they're too finicky and tricky to be usable. I would like preventing people from running away to be a fairly easy sort of in the grand scheme of things, right? Can you say anything about the change to the Mushroom Kingdom so we can now see Mushroom Warriors? How did that work originally? So what had happened is that in Mushroom Cave, there were two separate flags for sort of different types of for different types of killing the scouts. And like obviously like those people are not a fan of their fellows being cut down, but there were it was being tracked in two separate ways in different encounters, and you could basically get one of them high enough that you stopped getting the encounters that would actually trigger the Mushroom Warriors. Which, I mean, was not like bad, but like didn't have any really like intuitive sort of basis, right? So I basically just went through and unified all those flags, so that now anytime you're going around murdering them, rather than like doing specifically egregious things, like a general slaughter will now be enough, when before it required you to really just like be a kind of giant dick, and more specifically than that, be a giant dick before you'd pissed off the people as a whole enough to stop interacting with a way that would let really piss them off. It's like, oh yeah, this guy's coming around killing all of us, is just like not. Doesn't engender the same sort of rage, but should really still bring out the warriors. So that's all that happened. There were I'd split things up a little needlessly, and I think it works better now. And the reason that I really kind of like noticed that, that was going on is I was applying a bunch of those flags to the mushroom folk in the garage. So when I was moving those over, I was like, oh, okay, I have to move this flag. And then, like, there's this other flag that, like, basically nobody has gotten. It's like, okay. Like, was never really intended to lock this content behind like a weird timed puzzle. So let's clear this up a bit and make it a little more intuitive. And that's all that happened there. A couple years ago, I sent about the cooking upgrade that added strawberries, crocodile tails, and a third delicious ingredient. You gave the hint, it's not little. We haven't found anything. Any hints of where to look? You, I believe, also asked this in a message in-game, which I did answer. But I'm still going to give you an answer here, and they probably won't be entirely contradictory. Maybe they'll help separately, because I don't actually remember exactly what I said. Definitely not easy to find, for sure. Sort of out of the way. The it's not little is kind of a joke almost. A bit of playful wordplay, I guess. But as far as where to look, I think once you figure out what's funny about its size, and I don't think that there are a lot of things where their size is humorous, even at like a sort of, you know, Laffy Taffy level. You'll have a lot more luck tracking it down. It should be relatively obvious where it should be found. I'm going to give an example here, which is not actually what this item is, but you know, if it was, I think it's funnier slightly than if it were the humongous fungus, but like if there were a humongous fungus, you would know like, oh, okay, there's two places where humongous fungus might be, right? That's not entirely fair. There's a number of places where you can get mushrooms, obviously, but like there are a couple places where you'd immediately be like, okay, well, there are some mushroom forests that I should probably look in before I start, you know, turning over rocks. Is there a Shield of Scales avatar? I don't believe so, no. For the most part, the one coin items did not end up with avatars, and I think the Shield of Coins is... Shield of Scales is one coin. With the addition of dry ice and bracing cold effects, does that make Winter's Reflection for the antique floor mirror any different? I didn't go in and make any actual changes to integrate that. But there are certain equipment and buff flags that do matter in there, that are sort of tangled up in some of the dry ice stuff. Yes, but only indirectly. Is well-oiled machine effect still available? It's from pre-novice hacking. Wow, that is an interesting question. That I will have to do some boring on-air looking up. Give me one. I would say give me 1 second, but it's going to take a little longer than a second. 102. On other things that you can see, can you see the effect numbers? I'm not actually sure offhand. Oh, yeah, it's probably in the link for their descriptions. So, yeah, that's effect 102. Yes. Yes, you can still get that. Not surprised that nobody has, because the requirements have changed a bit. But yeah, no, you could still get that out in the campus hacking, where a lot of that stuff landed. Do echo capacitors do anything now? They're still for sale. That is another good question. Yeah, it looks like that never actually got updated to work with Novos. So, that's going on the list. No promises, like when that will happen. But I was not aware that I'd forgotten that. So, first, a few questions resurrected from. Oh, I'm sorry. So we finished up Al's questions. Hopefully, the answers were sufficiently satisfying and, mysterious or whatever it is exactly you're looking for from my answers. Moving on to cryptodynamic. We've got a couple questions resurrected from the previous podcast thread, which I had sort of abandoned in the funk of being trapped at home indefinitely, which I love being at home. I don't mind staying inside and like avoiding people, but like wow, that first chunk was rough there. Anyway, since cooking is a thing, any thoughts on adding pumpkins we can make things from, maybe for next Halloween? No, that seems pretty reasonable. I like a good pumpkin pie, actually. Liz is not a fan of pumpkin pie, but is the definitely the pie maker in our household, and so we've found actually a for our Thanksgiving this year, found an amazing gluten-free pie crust that I wish I remembered the brand of so I could plug it for all of your gluten-free pie crust needs. But definitely had to get myself a like slice of gluten-free pumpkin pie, which is in the freezer. So yeah, anyway, I love pumpkin pie. I have to go out of my way to get it now. But yeah, and there are other things that are also good about pumpkins, like roasted pumpkin seeds, actually surprisingly good. Kind of like, I was about to compare them to sunflower seeds, but that's actually not a very good comparison. They're just like crispy, crunchy treats. So yeah, I would not be surprised to see cookable pumpkins in the future. We've determined that our original thoughts on cellular differentiation report that results are based on active effects was wrong, and the effects in question just happen to overlap with more diverse triggers. That leaves us with an extremely broad set of possibilities for the third skill. Any chance on a hint of what might narrow things down? Let me actually look at that too to make sure that I don't say anything dumb. What I will say is I would expect it to be, even if I don't give you a hint now, I think what the sort of thing that you are shooting for will make more sense as more stuff in HQ gets added. But let's but yeah, it is more on the line of the vulgar rare requirement, which, like, there is some buffs that do kind of play into it, but is not like the primary way to get it. None of them are really actually buff specific. They're just sort of play in that space. But I think you could very, it's one of those things that it would not entirely surprise me if, like, a completely new player found it, because the tools to do it aren't, like, it's not like, oh, there's this one item, like, lost in the depths of time, and there are absolutely some mysteries that are just sort of like, oh yeah, this, you know, when I put this in, there were, like, you know, 300 items, and one of those items does this special thing, sort of stuff. But don't take that number as gospel, by the way. I was just pulling 300 out of my ass. But yeah. With the classic writing desk, would you say that drawing enemies into our whole world might be a productive use of energy? Man, I will admit I have not thought about this item for a long time, the classic writing desk. I'm not seeing anything that screams to me pulling enemies into the Hollow World being productive. There's a lot of stuff going on in there, though, so don't I guess, feel horribly disappointed if it does end up doing something in the future, but that doesn't, that isn't ringing a bell and isn't coming up from the code. There's definitely some, it's a sort of classic item in that I'm looking at it, and I'm like, wow, this was clearly designed by some madman. It's like, oh, wait, that's just me. Like, oh, right. That madman is me. Some friends and I were chatting about potential weapons in Cyberpunk 2077, and the sci-fi trope of archaic weapons using super science materials came up. Over here in Metroplex City, we already got a bunch of blades. What are your thoughts on having a few bows, crossbows, and related techniques? I actually have, I feel like some, I might even have some bow crossbow art. It's a little, I've only been a little leery to do it because every time I sort of like fork off a type of projectile weapon, I need to put a lot of thought into it as far as existing ranged techniques. So, like, the spear gun has just a unimaginable amount of little special cases on things. And a bow or crossbow would probably end up wanting largely the same. So that's mostly why you haven't seen those yet. But yeah, I'm not otherwise averse to putting in bows or crossbows. I would like to do that. I feel like they have a lot. Bows in particular, I think, have a lot more mythic sort of resonance than guns do. But I mean, that's also kind of the fun of having etheric guns, I guess. Sorry, this is me pausing because there's a bell in the background that I'm not sure if you can hear. There we go. If you had to pick some element of the game, like an item effect or encounter that you think could use more spading work, what would it be? Sorry, I just thought that just like hilariously cruel answer to that. Which was definitely the anything on the list of stuff that has been like spaded to death and may or may not have anything there. But let's see. There's definitely a new line of thought that I added into some of the hacking stuff with Novos that I don't think has been covered at all. This speaks a little bit to Well-Oiled Machine. There's a couple of like recipes and stuff that just haven't been found. ever, as far as I know. So I would say a bit around it's a part of the real idea with Novos, and I think that it is that it's more integrated in with reality in the sense that, you know, the broader game space and physical locations and stuff, there's a lot more physicality there. So there are a lot of things that don't necessarily, a lot of the new content for Novos, when I originally put it in, even didn't necessarily trigger in the same way that it did in that it would have in Old OS, which is sort of like, I mean, basically just get like a, you know, depending on the type of site that's generated or what hacking tools you use and stuff like that. Like there's some stuff that more that's anchored a little bit more in meat space, so to speak. And I think that's kind of and I think because of the transition, I think that became kind of a blind spot. So I would say that some of the stuff in there is probably worth looking over. Anything to talk about as far as unearthly items go? I think there's at least some thought given to a spear of some sort, right? The next unearthly item, which I would is probably actually the next big project that I'm working on. Well, big, certainly way smaller compared to like Halloween or anything like that, but the next real like content release will probably be that spear. Unless I, you know, totally run out of time. I need to drop it to make sure that we get Christmas stuff in, which is possible. But even then, hopefully, I'll be able to circle back around to it after Christmas. But yeah, that's on the horizon. Sort of a hunting spear, so to speak. Should we expect to find ways to get new types of mailing receipts once we make our way further into Midgard HQ? I don't have specific plans, but I would like to include that. I think that it's sort of a fun way to include some content. You know, just sort of like a. Excuse me. Like, yeah, like what? And I know it kind of adds a little more personality to the NPCs. Like, what is this person ordering to the office? And like, you know, some of those are probably perfectly legitimate, you know, office supplies, but a lot of them probably aren't. So, yeah, I would not be surprised to see more of those. But you know, if I somehow forget and finish Midgard HQ, definitely ask me to go back and add a couple of those. Is there some way to determine if it's safe to let out a cage mouse without going ahead and doing it? I did previously manage to get one to not run away and grant the tame mouse, but petting it still didn't seem to work very well, so I'm not sure at what point it happened. There is a lot of feedback the mouse gives about its mood in response to various interactions. So that said, there's sort of a combination of factors, which is, you know, how this stuff gets tricky, right? So I don't think that there is like a one line anywhere that's like this, like you can free this mouse and all will be well. I think there's a comparison that needs to be made, possibly even over multiple days, to sort of make sure that all is well. Because yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reasons it might not come back. Some questions from Gold S. Did we miss anything from Halloween this year? Man, it seems like so long ago now, despite the fact that it was, you know, less than a month ago. I'm not sure if I said this out loud. I did change jobs, which I mentioned, but I also was got glutened for a couple days here, so I'm a little... it's not that I think it directly affects, like, brain at all. I just can't really, like, eat for a while after that, and that definitely is not a... my body definitely does not prioritize my brain, and it takes a little while to get started back up. Anything you missed for Halloween this year? I feel like... Oh, actually, there was... I don't want to say it was missed, because there was, like, a bit of interaction with it. Yeah, by and large, there was... there was some stuff that got missed. I do think that, like, the... I think someone received the item reward for it. I can probably just say it. The only person who was really playing around with the vines growing up through, I believe, was Al. So there's some content kind of in that side that... like some encounters that you didn't necessarily see. But I think Al got the reward item in the title, but don't necessarily quote me on that. It's possible that didn't get to the point where those were handed out. In which case, yeah, those did get missed. I think that's sort of the big thing that I noticed not getting a lot of attention, but that might very easily just be because a lot of people didn't have vines there to help grow, because that requires kind of there's a whole chain of events that has to happen for that to come up. Similarly, did we miss something from Halloween in 2021? It seems like there's a fifth clay item we never found. No, the four... There are always sort of some other factors going on, but the four, like, big etheric choices, like, were the four... items, no, the four types of clay sculptures. Maybe I'm sitting here, I'm like, I might have included a, like, secret last one, but it was not like a, if I did, it wasn't for it wasn't like a whole path like the other ones were. It would have been more like a, you know, if you there is one last item, but it's not like that was not found. Could still in theory be found, but I wouldn't worry about it. It wasn't like a... It wasn't, like, co-equal with the other four. Like, it was... Those four were the main ones. And then there was a side one that was, like, that was just, like, a special treat, if anyone found it. Was the vine bracelet a reward for putting up artificial ivy during Halloween 2016 that nobody earned? I don't actually recall exactly what it was for originally, but the vine bracelet, yeah, was an old reward that I repurposed because, you know, I hadn't gotten it, and it seemed kind of fun to, to pull it back from the depths of despair. Let's see. Yeah, it looks like it was for supporting the divine stuff rather than ghouls or spiders. There was sort of two triads that time. But yeah, that was for choosing vines in the ghoul spider vine. And nobody did. So yeah, I just I went back in, thought it would be kind of fun to resuscitate that. And that was the item that I was talking about earlier that I wasn't sure if anyone had gotten this time. It would be pretty funny if nobody got it again, but I am glad that it did get handed out. Have you ever put Halloween content in areas other than the main Halloween locations? I mean, not in like a... I don't think not in the way that you're probably asking. Like, I don't generally hide things just by putting them in out of the way locations. Typically, like speaking of like event content, like obviously that's open game for like, you know, cooking ingredient or anything, but I've definitely, you know, obviously we've had Halloweens where like there you hack the shipping drones and the slags, so like there is stuff like that. But I always try, sometimes without success, to put like an arrow pointing there, being like, hey, this is some of the Halloween stuff is over here. Because yeah, that it's easy to, I mean, as much as I like that doesn't it doesn't seem like a, it's like if I were going to have a sort of scavenger hunt type activity like that, I wouldn't do it as part of Halloween. I would do that as part of either just as like a, you know, it's like, hey, I added the cooking ingredients that Al mentioned, or like, you know, it's like, oh, I've put in, you know, a bunch of new components for guns or whatever, and just let people find stuff that way, or as part of like maybe some other event. But I think that would really pull focus from how Halloween normally is, and I don't foresee that particularly changing. I wouldn't expect to do that in the future unless it was very explicitly like the theme, like well, I guess the best example of something that was kind of like that is there's no way I'm going to remember which year this was, but there was a Halloween year where you were recruiting students to go to the Halloween party. Actually, there might have been a couple years where this happened in various contexts, but and so like you had to, you know, go to where those students hang out to send different types of students to the party for different, you know, effects. And those obviously, like, you had to wander around some, but that was really kind of like, I feel like, presented in sort of like a, hey, go find some students. And the students were in like all the places you would expect those students to be. It was more of just structured as like a choice. Because, like, I don't know, fruitlessly searching seemed like, doesn't seem like great when Halloween is already so energy intensive. Like there's a lot of stuff that's going on there. But yeah, absolutely no promises the rest of the year. But yeah, Halloween I tend to either keep things contained or sort of, hopefully signpost it. The chat text in the lobby mailroom encounter suggests that people dump their stuff around Metroplex Day and Christmas. Is this flavor text or hinted upcoming content? I might very easily include some stuff for Christmas there too. No promises yet. I'm sort of that's still trying to get saying trying to get the spear out the door makes it sound like I've like mostly done spear trying to do the spear like that is the act of spearing is like an entire thing that needs to happen. Whether I end up having time to do that this year for Christmas is kind of an open question. But yeah, it's just a constant, I don't even want to say problem, it's just such a feature of office environments. Like every office that I've ever worked at, like the either everyone or the quote real employees get to like use the office shipping for like their own purposes. It just seems like it's just and so yeah, not having that in in Midgard seemed would feel weird to me. Is there a way to stop the server drone's internals from rupturing? Wow, people are super interested in this. No, there is not right now, but there clearly should be. So I apologize for adding that text and having it like it's conveying a flavor point that I think is kind of important. And obviously, like, really sidetracked people. So I feel like the only correct response from my side is to go back in and have you be able to, stop that and have it do something cool, right? But that's not how it is right now. It looks like most of the options from the August 2021 Patreon poll have developed, except for the Apocalyptic Hunter Spear. Is that still being worked on? Yeah. Yeah, I obviously mentioned that a bit up top. Yeah, that's the next thing on my plate. Does the pineapple juice sample have an extra effect we haven't found yet? I think. So, I think the pineapple juice sample is hilarious, but I feel like I have to leave it for everyone to decide whether I would think that it is funnier that there is now just a totally normal juice sample, as opposed to the orange juice sample that does some crazy shit. Or if I would think that it was hilarious that each flavor of juice had its own crazy shit that it was doing. And, I know which one I think is funnier. And it's definitely the one that I did go with. But I'll leave that one open to interpretation for the time being. So yeah, that wraps up our podcast at, an hour and a half. It's not too bad. I had a lot of life to go through with y'all because it's been a while since we've been able to have one of these. So yeah, it's been great being able to talk to you. Really thanks for asking questions and of course playing the game, still participating in Game Warfare. capturing adorable mice, like all of the little things that you were doing in the game. Really kind of, I don't know, they warm my heart, and it has not doing these has not given me a time to really say that, but I do really appreciate each and every one of you and what you, the sort of view and excitement that you bring to the game. It's really quite cool. And obviously, as I mentioned way up top, huge thanks to the Patreons, especially earlier this year when I was just like, when I was just like out for 6 months. I could just kind of let the game take care of itself, where if we had been relying on sort of the old donation system or anything like that, like it would have very quickly been coming out of my zero income, because I also was not working. And obviously, like, my negative income, I guess, because American medical system is its own special kind of amazing. So yeah, huge thank you to the patrons, both, like, for, you know, having faith in me over the long term, even when I'm laid up and effectively comatose for any sort of useful purpose. And yeah, just for, I don't know, thank you for both having your faith, having that faith in me, and for helping me keep the game afloat for everyone, even when, you know, when I'm not able to do it alone. Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, before I get weepy or anything, I'm going to call it a podcast. Thanks very much. I hope to do this again, not like in December or anything, but sooner than this last gap. Yeah. Thanks very much. I will talk to you next time.